Court appointed is meant to be for entertainment purposes and basic legal information only.
Nothing in this podcast should be considered as legal representation nor legal advice.
Only use the knowledge presented herein to dazzle your friends or possibly win bar trivia.
Dr. Lawyer, idiot chief. For my life with songs of grief, with the yellow fear and fearless eyes. Temper all the times, the times I
welcome to Court Appointed, PD's perspective on legal frivolity. I'm your co-host, Mike Meadows. I'm a lawyer and a dude.
And I'm your other co-host, Tommy Smurl. And I am just a dude.
So you've been playing any Pac-Man lately?
No, I never was. I played Miss Pac-Man when I was a kid. Well, not even a kid. I guess I was still an old man then when it came out. But I played Miss Pac-Man rather than Pac-Man. I wasn't much into that. Not much Donkey Kong either, except on your old Atari or something like that.
Yeah, I had those on the old Atari. We have one of those kind of homebrew machines here at the house where it's got all the different games on it. It's got probably 15 or 20 different games on it. It's got like a Miss Pac-Man on there and Donkey Kong, Donkey Kong Jr. and all that. And the Miss Pac-Man, there's actually different ones of them. And the one I like the most is actually, it's faster than the normal one.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, it actually seems to be a little bit easier that it's faster. I don't know why, but...
Huh, so. You don't have time to think about it.
There's no time to think down there. You just got to act.
Just react. That's why I like the old Galaga.
Yeah?
Yeah, shooting the missiles at those descending other ships and dodging them around and all that. I always liked that old one. That was my favorite. Not that I was any good at it, I mean, but I always liked that one best.
So you say Galaga, right?
Well, there's a Galaxa, but there's also a Galaga. I don't know. There's two different kinds, I think.
Yeah, so I caught some grief for saying Galaga, because some people say Galaga or something.
Oh, they Galaga?
Say it, they say it differently, or Galaga.
Galaga?
They say. But I always said, I said Galaga, because the first game was called Galaxian.
Right.
And so, therefore, the second one should be similar to that, I thought.
Galaga.
Yeah.
Yeah,
so, I don't know. But there's some there's some people that think that it shouldn't be pronounced that way. They think it has a different pronunciation. But I'm here to tell them they're wrong. So,
well, however I pronounce it, it's probably the opposite.
You might be right.
Sure. I usually get them wrong.
Well, I'm sure some of our listeners have some different ways they pronounce it as well, and probably think that Galag is wrong. I think maybe did we talk about this in a different episode? I feel like we have.
We may have brought it up before, yeah. But I imagine that our listeners are probably wondering, why the hell are they talking about this? How did we get into video games? What is this? Is a video game podcast? What happened here?
Well, when I was scrolling through the news on my phone, I saw an old friend that popped up in some of the news stories. And when I say friend, I don't mean that as an actual friend, just an old story I remember. And it had to do with Billy Mitchell.
Oh, I thought you meant Richard Greenwell. You said an old friend popped up.
No. Nope. But Billy Mitchell, he was kind of the antagonist in a documentary called The King of Kong's A Fistful of Quarters, which came out in 2007. And I say antagonist because he was portrayed pretty roughly in that documentary. And I asked you if you had ever seen that documentary, and you said you hadn't. And I said, well, you know what? You should watch that documentary and read the article about this new lawsuit that he's involved in. We should do a story about it.
And so we did. I didn't realize that it was required that you'd given me homework, and I just looked up some information about him and was prepared to record, and then you said, no, you have to watch the show. So by the time I watched it, then we were late getting our podcast up.
But, I mean, don't you think watching the actual documentary gave you some good background about some of these characters?
Well, I do, yes, understand it much better now than I did just reading this. Reading the reports that actually seem like real normal people and stuff with normal problems, even though it was a little bit, you know, it's a kid's game and we're arguing over who got the highest score, but still they seem a little normal. Once I saw the documentary, I saw none of them are normal.
That's right. Everyone there is pretty odd. So
yeah.
the actual documentary itself, The King of Kong's A Fistful of Quarters, like I said, it came out in 2007, and it follows Steve Wiebe in his attempt to take the high score from Billy Mitchell in the game Donkey Kong. And so back in 1981, when the cabinet arcade games all came out, there was a company called Twin Galaxies, and there was an organization trying to track the different high scores for all the different video games. And the founder of that was this gentleman named Walter Day, and he appears in the documentary as well. He's always wearing a referee's outfit. And yeah. But back in 1981, he got all these different people together to show their high scores and everything, and they had like a photo shoot, and they had their arcade, their cabinets out in the middle of the street, and it was all supposedly the hot shot high scores for all the different classic arcade games like Pac-Man, Donkey Kong, Missile Command, just all the old school games.
Well, and let's just say that this guy had, he was not really in a position of authority, or nobody certified him to do this. He was just a guy that played video games and had an arcade, and decided, you know what, somebody should go around and start documenting the high scores and put it on probably like that old bulletin board you talked about you used to post when you were a kid.
Yeah, on a BBS.
Yeah, it was probably on something like that, you know, when he first started out back in the early 80s.
He was the sysop of Twin Galaxies BBS, baby.
Yeah, yeah. And so he comes up with a fancy name, Twin Galaxies. You know, who that sounds official. Yeah. And he starts posting these high scores that are in there. Well, it gets enough attention from gamers that they all talk about it and go to that, and somehow it reaches this level of certitude where, you know, this is the guy that does it. And he's just a guy that plays video games.
Yeah, and he's just been around and been doing it for so long that it kind of just the job fell to him.
Yeah, and that became his full-time job, being the guy that checks the high scores and posted them on his bulletin board.
Although you see in the documentary, he aspires to want to be a musician.
Yeah. I think that was a plug to try to get some music on TV. He thought he was going to be discovered.
But if you haven't seen this documentary, I highly recommend it. It's got a very high Rotten Tomatoes rating, too. It's very entertaining.
It is very entertaining, probably for the wrong reasons, not what the documentarians intended it to be. Now, I found it in a couple different places where you actually had to pay to rent it, but it's on YouTube. You can just go to YouTube and watch it there.
Oh, I didn't know it was on YouTube. Nice.
Yeah. Yeah. That's when I finally got around to seeing it. I found it on YouTube at work, so that's where I was able to watch it.
So, now, back in the day when Twin Galaxies was first started and everything like that, the way people documented their high scores was they would probably take a picture of the high score and send it in, or possibly a videotape if they have access to a video camera or something along those lines. And as technology has kind of increased over the years, what would happen is that people would videotape themselves playing the game and then send it in for certification. And there's different referees that Twin Galaxies had, and they would certify the score. But the one score that had not been able to have been topped was this Donkey Kong score by Billy Mitchell from back in the early 80s. So this gentleman named Steve Wiebe, he purchased a Donkey Kong cabinet and decided what he was going to do is he was going to try to beat the world record. He was, I think he was like some sort of engineer for Boeing and then out of work. And he decided this is what he was going to do to spend his time. He was going to work on that. And he ended up becoming a teacher as well. But in the meantime, that was kind of his hobby. He wanted to sit in his garage, videotape himself playing Donkey Kong and try to beat the high score.
But he's a very soft-spoken individual, and apparently he also suffers very deeply from OCD. Mm-hmm. So it was like once he latched on to this is something he needed to do, he could not stop himself. He had to keep working at it until he got there.
Yeah. And so eventually he videotapes himself setting a new world record of 947,200 points in 2003. And just to let you know kind of like how long that took, he played Donkey Kong for about 2.5-3 hours, I think, to get that score. So that's how long you have to play Donkey Kong straight. And there's no pause button or anything like that. You can't get up and go to the bathroom. Like, that's an old-school video game. You're sitting there for that. It almost becomes a bit of a endurance feat as well, I think.
Oh, yeah. So, that's what I wondered. How do you not go to the bathroom during that time? Because there isn't a pause or anything.
No. So he sends in the tape to Twin Galaxies, and they see it, and they're all like, whoa, you know, he beat Billy Mitchell's score, because Billy Mitchell is something of a celebrity at Twin Galaxies. He's one of the original guys that they had around, and he's well-known. Nobody knows who this other guy is. And
well, and they had a mutual agreement there, Walter and Billy. They'd helped each other out, but Billy sort of vouched for Walter and Walter vouched for Billy. And so they had a mutual interest in keeping each other at the top of their games there.
Yeah. So they end up sending some people from Twin Galaxies out to investigate this machine that he beat the record on. And lo and behold, they find out that the circuit board was provided by a gentleman named Roy Schilt. And Roy Schilt was a character in the documentary as well. He goes by the name Mr. Awesome. And he is like he has some pickup artist tapes, and he was a Playgirl model and all. He's a bit of a character. But evidently, he has a back history with Billy Mitchell. They have some sort of feud. And so they found out.
Billy Mitchell took away his Centipede top score.
That's true.
That's why they had a feud. Billy Mitchell beat his top Centipede score, and he never was recognized as the top Centipede player.
Yeah, and supposedly he does have the high score for Missile Command. I don't know if that's still true or not. But anyway, so you can screw with these circuit boards and try to change the timing of the machines a little bit. Now, there's no proof that the machine that Steve Wiebe beat the score on was like in any way, but just the simple fact that it was provided by this guy who had beef with Billy Mitchell was enough for them to invalidate his score. So what they did is they said, we're going to invite you to travel to our annual tournament and try to beat it in person.
And this board was supplied to, in other words, he was playing it on another game. It was the console was for another game. And they provided him with the board for Donkey Kong. So it was like you could change those boards and it didn't matter what the cabinet looked like.
Right. It's just that it was a Donkey Kong Jr. machine, I think, was actually what he was playing it on. But you can change out the circuitry on it and it's basically a different game at that point.
So that's when they started questioning it.
Yeah. So he went to Fun Spot, which is in New Hampshire, and he was going to set the high score there. And he eventually plays there for the show. The documentary shows him playing there. And then before a crowd, he breaks his other record at 985,600 and reaches the kill screen, which is basically where you get such a high score and you go so far, the game just kind of shuts down. And so he did that live and in person. And that was kind of a big deal because nobody had ever seen that really done in person in a tournament like this.
Yeah, because here you got all these people wandering around. You got people sitting right there over your shoulder watching what you're doing to make sure that you're not cheating or anything like that. Although I don't know how you'd cheat, but they sit there watching you and everything. And this kill screen is where basically the machine runs out of memory. It's only got so much memory that at the time, the way the games were made, they could only put so much in. So if you made it so far, the game just didn't go any further. And Mario there, or whoever the guy was, he just kind of just disintegrates.
Yeah, he spins over and it stops. Now, here's the interesting thing. Somehow, Billy Mitchell sent in a videotape, which arrived about the same time that Steve Wiebe set this high score, which was a videotape of him achieving 1,047,200 points. And this was a videotape score that Billy Mitchell had sent in. And so and so the weird thing about this is you can actually see it. There's a bit of a glitch and the thing jumps. And Walter Day doesn't really have a good feeling about it. But he trusts Billy and they're so intertwined at this point that he says even after putting in Steve's high score, he gets this videotape that same day or the next day and then goes and changes it and gives Billy Mitchell the high score back again. And Steve Wiebe is just crushed. I mean, you can see it in his eyes. Like he is like just heartbroken.
Yeah, it's a wonder he didn't just go unplug the machine and wrap the cord around his neck or something because it was demoralizing that he sat there and played it and he had this one goofball that's in the background and he's going, if you want to see a kill screen, he's going to get to the kill screen in a minute and he's walking all around making the announcement to everybody in the arcade. If you want to see the Donkey Kong kill screen, it's going to be up there in a few minutes. It's going to be up there. And really what he was doing, he was doing this for Billy's benefit because he was trying to get these people over there to build the tension and put more pressure on Steve Wiebe so he'd screw up and not get the score. So that's what that was all about. He kept running back. You want to see a kill screen? Hey, there's going to be a kill screen. They've got this whole montage of him running around the place telling everybody, you're going to see a kill screen if you want to go see a kill screen. And most of the people just look over and are like, where did this idiot come from?
And the thing is, he considers himself like the successor or the heir apparent to Billy Mitchell, because he's the one who's been trying to get the new Donkey Kong score. He actually moved close to that arcade just so he could play that game more, it says in the documentary. And so when Steve Wiebe, before he finds out about Billy Mitchell sending in this other score, when he first finds out that Steve Wiebe broke this score and he sees it, you talk about somebody who looks like they just, you know, want to wrap the cord from the machine around their neck. I mean, that was him. He looked just shell-shocked.
Well, when Billy Mitchell found out that Steve Wiebe was going to show up to do that, I guess he felt fairly certain this guy's probably legit.
Yeah.
So he sent this videotape with another lady, an old lady that was coming to try to retake her record for Qbert, if you remember the old Qbert game. And so he sent this tape, and basically it went to Walter and said, if he breaks my record, watch this videotape.
Yeah. So now after that happens, Guinness World Records, the ones that publish their book and certify all the different world records.
And make the beer.
They appoint Twin Galaxies as the repository of all high scores for classic video games, because they've been around so long and they already have this history, so they can kind of almost outsource this. That's one less thing they have to investigate. And so, sure enough, Twin Galaxies, when they have a chance to publish it, they publish Mitchell's high score. They don't show Steve Wiebe's live score. They show the videotaped one that, even though there were some questions about it, they went ahead and published that one. So Guinness goes ahead and has another tournament, and this happens in Hollywood, Florida. This is 9 months after the Fun Spot fiasco, and Wiebe reaches out to Billy Mitchell, because this is where Billy Mitchell lives. He lives in South Florida, very close to where this tournament's taking place, so he thinks there's no way Billy Mitchell can duck me in person. It's right in his backyard. He has to do it.
And Steve travels 3,000 miles to get there to participate in that, because he figures now's his chance to finally show down with Billy Mitchell.
Yeah, but Billy Mitchell, even though he's right there, he never plays with him. He just continues working at his restaurant. They have a restaurant called Ricky's Restaurant, and he sells hot sauce. In the early beginning of the documentary, I kind of like it. You see him stocking his hot sauce on the shelves, and he's moving other people's hot sauce to the back and pushing his in front. And I think it's almost kind of like, it shows you he's ruthless.
Yeah, he's a real character, too.
He is. But unfortunately, Steve Wiebe never tops the high score when he's down there. It shows him just kind of crestfallen that he didn't do it, and he's just really just down the dumps. But then Walter Day reaches out to him and gives him some sort of award and says that he's free to submit videotape scores in the future, and that they respect him, that they believe he has the quality of a top-notch player and all this stuff, and please submit any videos you might have in the future. Kind of after they had screwed him over so many times, reaching across the table and saying, hey, if you videotape a good score again, send it to us, we'll certify it.
Well, I think Walter, deep down, is a decent person, and he knew that Billy was working him, and he had stuck up for Billy, but it's hard to justify that they wouldn't take Steve's videotape of his performance, but then they turn around. They made him come and do it in person. He did it. And then they turn around and Billy Mitchell sends in a tape, and they take his, and it's obviously got, you know, some glitches on it that look very suspicious.
Yeah.
And they don't question it. They just said, okay, well, if you're saying you sent it in, Billy Mitchell, then you get the high score.
Now, Wiebe actually did achieve a new high score and beat the high score that Mitchell had when he sent in a videotape when he got home. And then Mitchell again got another high score of the beat that one, and supposedly at this Boomer's Arcade in Dania, Florida. And that was the last time that either one of them held the record until later. So there's other people that have held it since then, because I guess maybe this documentary probably got other people interested in trying to achieve the Donkey Kong high score. But anyway, it's gone back and forth. But I want to talk a bit more about Billy Mitchell and some of his attire and his persona. But I think before we do that, there might be a pending motion before the court today.
Why, yes, if it pleases your Donkey Kong ship, we'd like to approach the bench to pay court costs.
All right, who do we have on the docket?
We have on the docket today our good friends at BetterHelp.com. That's H-E-L-P, BetterHelp.
So is there something interfering with your happiness or preventing you from achieving your goals?
Yes, a pandemic.
BetterHelp will assess your needs and match you with your own licensed professional therapist, and you can start communicating in under 48 hours.
It's not a crisis line. It's not a self-help line. It is professional counseling done securely online.
There's a broad range of expertise available, which may not be locally available in many areas.
This service is available for clients worldwide. You can log into your account anytime and send a message to your counselor.
And you'll get timely and thoughtful responses. Plus, you can schedule weekly video or phone sessions, so you won't ever have to sit in uncomfortable waiting rooms with traditional therapy.
You know what we think about those.
That's right. We don't like them.
We don't like them. They have bad magazines.
Bad old magazines.
And besides, there's always some guy sitting in there that doesn't have a mask on.
Better not be.
BetterHelp is committed to facilitating great therapeutic matches, so they make it easy and free to change counselors if needed.
And it's more affordable than traditional offline counseling, and financial aid is available.
BetterHelp wants you to start living a happier life today.
You can visit their website and read their testimonials that are posted daily. Visit BetterHelp.com, that's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P, and join the over 1 million people who have taken charge of their mental health with the help of an experienced professional.
In fact, so many people have been using BetterHelp that they are recruiting additional counselors in all 50 states.
And there's a special offer for court-appointed listeners. You'll get 10% off your first month at BetterHelp.com/court.
That's right. Go to BetterHelp.com/court and get 10% off your first month of therapeutic sessions. We want you to get better help today.
So now in the documentary, as I said, Billy Mitchell, he is portrayed kind of like the villain of the story. He seems very smug. He's constantly wearing like this American tie. He's wearing like eagle ties. He just seems pretty egotistical. And
he's got a pretty fly mullet going.
He does have a fly mullet. And I think that was almost kind of a choice. I'm sure he supplied that persona to the documentary, but I think he also, probably has a different side as well, but I don't know. I think they definitely tried to portray him in that light. And I think they succeeded certainly.
Well, I was just gonna say it was just a shame that we never saw him actually play a game of Donkey Kong throughout that whole documentary.
No.
Steve Wiebe played his ass off. And Billy Mitchell never handled a joystick. So, I don't know. It just didn't seem right that he was all this praise and everything heaped on him. And he never once even attempted to defend himself.
Yeah. So that brings us up to a little bit more towards present. And even though Billy Mitchell is kind of known as an expert video game player, he's also known to be a kind of a litigious type person as well, who's not afraid to use the courts to settle any kind of disputes. He sued Cartoon Network because they aired an episode of a show called Regular Show when they had a character that resembled him. And that lawsuit was actually thrown out. But the character, I think, does kind of look like him in that episode.
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah.
Well, was he playing Donkey Kong?
Yeah, it had him playing video games. He was this all-knowing type figure, and he had the signature mullet.
Oh, yeah?
It looked like him. So that lawsuit was eventually thrown out because the judge said that it didn't resemble him. But if you come forward a little bit more present, there were some people who started wondering about some of these different high scores that he had. And basically this started in August of 2017 because the Twin Galaxies, they have these online forums. And if you've ever visited any kind of forums, that's where the hive mind gets together and starts coming up with all kinds of interesting scenarios and different theories about things.
All the nerds.
Hey, I take that personally. I spend some time on forums.
Penthouse forums?
No. Video game forums, Jeep forums, Jiu-Jitsu forums.
Do they even still have penthouse forums? Did that went out of business, I would guess. I hadn't heard of anything about that in years.
I don't know.
It was big when I was in college, but I don't know anything about it now.
So the forum, they started talking about Billy Mitchell's score that he got at Boomers, the one in where he beat Steve Wiebe's score. And he supposedly had played Donkey Kong and Donkey Kong Jr. that same day and broke records for both, but he used the same cabinet for it. And supposedly a gentleman there had swapped out the circuit board between the runs. And the video did not show the complete record.
Yeah. That's pretty good if he was able to do it between the runs.
Yeah.
Usually you can't stop and go to the bathroom.
they thought, the people that saw the videos thought there might be some issues, and they seemed that some of the board switching was staged a little bit, and that the recording was made after the records had been set on actual real hardware. So they saw some inconsistencies with the videos. And one of the moderators continued to investigate the video and also was trying to look at evidence whether or not these were possibly made on a MAME machine. And what MAME is a multiple arcade machine emulator. And so it's actually not just a circuit board for that one game. You can play multiple games on it. That's kind of similar to what we have here in my house. It's a MAME.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. That's what you got.
Yeah, it's a MAME cabinet. So it's not exactly the original circuitry. So you don't know. You could, in theory, you could change some of the programming of the game and change it so the barrels don't come out as fast, or you can jump higher or something along those lines to make it easier to get the high score.
So, if you know what you're doing.
Yeah, which, I mean, I wouldn't know how to do any of that stuff. But anyway, this the moderator there basically determined that these scores were set on a MAME cabinet and that the circuit board swap was just done just to show that it was actual real circuitry, which actually it wasn't. The circuit board swap was just to try to show that it was a real machine.
Oh, I see.
So they removed the high scores because they were done on a MAME machine. And additionally, this high score was supposedly witnessed by a gentleman named Todd Rogers, who had seen him score these high scores and was basically a witness for him. But he had been accused of submitting fraudulent scores from himself, too. So that didn't really help bolster Billy Mitchell's score.
You should never get a liar to be your witness.
No, that's one of the things that you can impeach somebody. It doesn't do you any good to have a liar as a witness.
Yeah.
So after that took place, Twin Galaxies announced that an investigation conducted into the submitted scores found conclusive evidence that Mitchell had used an emulator for the footage of his high scores, and they removed all of his scores from their records and prohibited him from submitting scores in the future. So
basically, Billy and Walter had a falling out.
Pretty much. But I think at that point, Walter left Twin Mitchell's at some point, so I don't know if he was still involved there or not, because he actually did leave Twin Galaxies to pursue a music career, ironically enough. So Billy Mitchell was not happy about this, and he decided what he was going to do is file a lawsuit. Guinness World Records actually released a statement, and they said that the high scores for Donkey Kong had been disqualified due to Twin Galaxies being their source of verification for these achievements. So again, Guinness deferred to Twin Galaxies since they were the ones who provided the original verification for it. And since they said that they were taking them down and they weren't valid anymore, they were going to take them off as well. And I think that's what really stung Billy Mitchell, that he was no longer in in the Guinness Book of World Records. So he filed a lawsuit against Twin Galaxies in Los Angeles in April of 2019 and filed a defamation claim. And also filed a defamation claim in Broward, Florida against Twin Galaxies, as well against Young, the gentleman who had investigated, and a YouTuber named Apollo Legend. They had evidently participated in the investigation. And most recently, what we heard about was stemming from the Los Angeles County lawsuit, because Twin Galaxies had sought a motion to dismiss the case under California's anti-slap laws, which we had talked about those before in a previous episode.
Right, they slapped him down.
Yeah, the judge ruled that Mitchell's claims met the minimal merit to proceed to trial and ordered Mitchell to cover Twin Galaxies' legal costs as a bail bond should they prevail in the case. So it was kind of a split-the-baby type ruling, because even though Mitchell prevailed, he basically wanted them to put up some sort of bail bond in case they prevailed, because I guess maybe there were some issues there. The judge, who is Judge Gregory Alarcon, ruled that Mitchell is a public figure in the gaming community and that Twin Galaxies was discussing a controversy of public interest to that community. That means that Mitchell is going to have to prove at trial both the falsity of Twin Galaxies' claims and that the organizations acted with actual malice in making them. So that's kind of a very significant issue there, is that Billy Mitchell is judged to be a public figure. So in addition to showing the statements were false, That means they actually have to show some sort of malice in making them. So that's a much higher standard and harder burden to meet. Now, one of the interesting things that the Twin Galaxies motion to dismiss is that it attached the 3,770 post dispute thread from the forum, which surrounded the Donkey Kong score. So that's actually part of the court record. And that forum thread had been viewed nearly 2.4 million times as of March 14th, 2020. There were entries from 170 unique contributors and 211 public votes on the desired outcome of the case, which Mitchell lost 198-13. So this forum became part of the court record for this. So it's kind of interesting that you didn't think these forums aren't really, they don't mean anything. This one actually is attached to a court record.
Wow. Yeah. He went into the nerd forum and used that as evidence that 198 nerds voted against him, huh?
Yeah. Now, here's the interesting thing. In June of 2020, Guinness said that after a careful review of the past video evidence and other material submitted, that it could not find conclusive proof that Mitchell had used any improper methods to achieve the high scores and rescored his Donkey Kong and Pac-Man records.
Well, I think what happened was they just didn't want to be involved in the lawsuit. At that point, it wasn't worth it. Like I say, they're not a big major company. It was just some guy that gathered arcade scores.
Yeah. Well, I think Guinness didn't want to get involved in it either. They thought, you know what? This is a dispute between you all. I'm going to let you duke it out in your forums and do whatever you need to. We're just going to kick back and have a pint of our delicious Guinness. I think that's what decided to do.
I wish they would. I'd like to have a keg of Guinness on hand at all times.
Yeah, I do like some Guinness. So now that lawsuit is still going on, but even though it was a win for Billy Mitchell, I think the ruling of the court may not turn out exactly as, in the long run, may not exactly turn out how he wants it to end up, given the fact that he was judged to be a public figure, therefore he has that higher standard, and he has to put up a bond for Twin Galaxies' legal costs if they prevail in the case. So, because I think him being a public figure, he probably is going to lose, because that's a very hard burden to meet.
Well, and they tried to be very careful in how they worded the statement. They just said that their investigation came to the conclusion that these scores might not have been achieved properly, or something to that effect.
Yeah.
And of course, he turned around and said, well, they called me a cheater.
Yeah.
They said that I lied and called me a cheater. Well, no, they didn't say that. They just said they couldn't find enough conclusive evidence to back up his claims.
Yeah.
Which, you can construe that as being called a cheater, but they tried to very carefully say, you know, this is what we found, and, you know, submit it, do it a different way if you want to do it, if you're that good.
There's a couple things about him in the documentary that I actually really like. I like the fact that he says, he speaks in third person about himself, and he says, Billy Mitchell always has a plan.
Yeah.
I kind of like that.
And I've learned anybody that speaks of themselves in the third person, don't trust that person.
And I did kind of like the fact that when he put his three initials in for a high score, that he chose USA, because he said, I'm always out there representing the USA and doing this for America. So I kind of like the guy a little bit.
It was funny. The guy asked him, said, now, what do you use for your three initials on there? And he kind of started tugging on his tie and he said, don't you know? Can't you just look at me and tell what it is?
Yeah.
And he kept tugging on his tie, and the guy said, tie, T-I-E? No, the tie had the Statue of Liberty on it. He goes, no, look, it's America. Oh, USA, yes.
I think, too, like whenever I think of these different people that are, you know, public figures or celebrities I've seen in documentaries and movies, but I like to have a beer with them or get my picture taken with them. And I think on that whole beer/picture scale, Billy Mitchell, he passes the test. I would have a beer or get my picture taken with Billy Mitchell. I think I would like that. So
I would rather have mine made with Steve Wiebe.
Well, I would too. But the thing
is, I think he's legit.
He is. But here's the thing. I don't know if I could pick Steve Wiebe out of a lineup. There's no missing Billy Mitchell. He's like 6'5". He's got this huge black mullet. He's probably wearing a black shirt with some sort of USA flag tie, probably carrying a bottle of hot sauce.
Yeah.
He's pretty noticeable.
Yeah. And he, well, I won't say it. Never mind.
Yeah, he might sue us. I don't know, Tommy. He'll say too bad. So, but no, I do think he'd be an interesting character to talk to, and I think that the whole documentary and the whole saga of Donkey Kong high scores and everything along those lines, super entertaining, and it does make me a little bit sad that it's kind of gone into the court system, but it does make for an interesting segue between illegal podcasts and video games. That's for certain.
Well, they had, after I finished it on YouTube there, I looked and they had several other kind of follow-up things. They had some deleted scenes and they had the guy that was going around telling everybody the kill screen's coming up. They had him on a podcast.
Oh, really?
Where they were asking him about that and saying, you know, this, did you like the way they portrayed you on there? He goes, no, they didn't portray me the way I am. That was terrible. I'm really upset about the way they portrayed me in there. Well, they said, well, wasn't that you going around telling everybody? Well, yeah, I did tell people to come and do it. They said, well, wasn't your purpose to try to put more pressure on Steve and hope that he'd fail? You were trying to help Billy out. Well, there's no doubt that, yeah, that was part of it. I was trying to help Billy out. So, it's like, well, what exactly then was not portrayed properly?
Yeah.
You know? It's like, it's going to be a kill screen. If you want to see a kill screen, come on around. 2 minutes there. It's going to be a kill screen.
It's like the whole objection, Your Honor. All right, counsel, what's your grounds? This testimony is horrible for my case. Please make it stop. Like, that's kind of...
It was pretty funny, though. But you know, here was Steve Wiebe at the place trying to set the score, and you'd see Billy Mitchell just walk around the corner. And Billy wouldn't acknowledge him. He went walking by while Steve was playing, went walking by, and Steve lifted an eye up quickly from the game to see that's who it was. Hey, Billy. Billy just walks right by and blows him off. That was his mind games. He was trying to get in his head to keep him from setting the score.
Oh, yeah, because he's like, hey, Billy. And kind of looks over and he doesn't say anything. And he goes back to playing Donkey Kong. He's like,
yeah. And he kept positioning himself around where Steve Wiebe could see him and knew he was there. And that was distracting because he loses like two players in a row, you know, but while Billy's walking around there.
Yeah. It's a kind of an entertaining saga, but we'll have to watch the news and see what happens. I think that the case will end up being resolved at some point. I don't think this is going to go to trial, and I think it's probably going to be some sort of voluntary dismissal on behalf of Billy Mitchell.
Well, I thought it was interesting, too, from a legal aspect, where Guinness had taken the stand, hey, look, we don't verify these things. We use Twin Galaxies. They tell us who the people are that have these scores, and we simply take for granted, we take as gospel whatever they give us. So if they decided to strip somebody of one and we took them out of our book, we're not liable for anything. We just were using them. They're our source, good, bad, or indifferent. Yeah. That's our source. So you can't sue us.
Yeah. Like if the Bradys do have the teeter-totter world record, they set it one night, then who knows? Remember that Brady Bunch episode?
Oh, okay. Yeah, I didn't know where you were going with that. I'm thinking Tom Brady. I'm thinking Tom Brady's kids set the teeter-totter record?
Yeah, exactly. Let's just go with that. We're going to throw that out there. Tom Brady's children have set the teeter-totter world record. It's in Guinness Book of World Records. No, that was I think that was probably my first exposure to the Guinness Book of World Records was the Brady Bunch episode.
Oh, really? I never thought that it was related. We used to get... like Sydney was interested in those and Riley was interested in those. We used to get the Guinness book, like the latest edition for Christmas them each year to go through and look at the different things in there. And I never really thought it was related to the beer until much later when I found out, they're exactly the ones that started that.
Really?
And it was to settle like disputes in local bars. People would say, no, this guy did that. No, this guy did that. So they decided that it would be good to settle fights in bars by having this information somewhere it could be looked up.
Are you serious?
So a guy from Guinness actually hired the guy to go around and search out all these records and put them together in a book. And at first it was just like a monthly pamphlet they put out that for free that promoted their beer and gave out these facts. Well, then they realized people wanted it so much that they started publishing it as a book and selling it.
You know, when you were talking about the beer in the book, I thought you were just joking. I thought it was some sort of gag you were going along with it.
Well, no, actually, that it is associated with Guinness the beer. That's where it comes from.
Well, look at me learning something today.
There you go. That'll be on your legal briefs.
Yeah. I don't think I'll miss it. Yeah, that's crazy. I really did not know that.
Yeah. Well, you learn something new every day.
Yeah. So we can settle bar trivia that way.
There you go.
So really, the Guinness Book of World Records was kind of a print version of what we're trying to do here with our legal podcast.
Yeah, in a way.
Bar trivia.
That's right. And that was exactly what it got founded on. They were trying to settle disputes where people were drinking their beer. And fight's bad for their beer because people don't buy as many once they've been in a fight. They buy more when they're happy and slapping each other on the back.
That's right. Nobody, if you're fighting, you're not drinking beer.
That's right. You're dumping them over somebody's head.
Or throwing tables or chairs. Or hit them in the back of the head with a pool stick.
Yeah, well, I've seen that happen before.
I didn't. All right. Well, I think that's going to bring us to...
Legal briefs.
So legal briefs is a part of the show where I ask Tommy different legal questions or maybe some other just generic questions that kind of popped up during the episode and see if he knows what they mean. So the first question has to do with video games. What does MAME stand for?
It means that it mimics other machine automatic mimic energy. Something like that.
Well, the theory's there, but the wording is not. It's multiple arcade machine emulator.
Oh, there you go. It's an emulator.
Yeah, it emulates the circuitry that's involved in these games. So emulators are super popular right now. And the nice thing about emulators is that you can stick a bunch of games on a very small amount where technology has increased. Like if you want to get some sort of emulator that has all the Nintendo games on there, you could basically put every single Nintendo game ever made, which is probably like, who knows, like 500, 600, 700 games, all on one very small little piece of data now because storage is so much bigger now.
Right.
The trick is regarding to licensing because you don't have licensing to stick them on there. So that's where emulators kind of run into a bit of trouble.
I'll keep that in mind the next emulator I'm looking for.
Yeah. Well, if you ever get like a Raspberry Pi and you bake it up and stick some emulators on there and put some software.
That's more of an emulsion than an emulator.
Anti-slap. What is anti-slap?
Well, slap is strategic lawsuits against public participation.
Boom.
That's right. So that's saying that you can't do that. It's saying you're just suing somebody to get them to go away because they can't afford the cost of the ante at the table.
Yeah, and it's a way to kind of have a lawsuit dismissed early based on these kinds of principles rather than litigate it out. Because if you litigate it out, you're kind of giving the plaintiff what they want. You're having them incur legal costs. So it's kind of a way to short circuit something that is a anti-slap lawsuit.
Right.
What is a motion to dismiss?
A motion to dismiss is just that. You want to dismiss it from the very beginning and not even have the case before you even get to discovery or anything.
That's right. And the instance in this case, that's the vehicle for the anti-slap motion to dismiss was a motion to dismiss. And for purposes of a motion to dismiss, what the judge does is they take all the allegations in the complaint as true because there's no evidence that really comes into play in a motion to dismiss. You're just essentially looking at the pleadings themselves and making a ruling on that. So it's different.
And say, even if you're right, it doesn't matter.
Exactly. If you have evidence and things like that, that's more akin to a motion for summary judgment, which would happen later on after discovery is completed, and you would actually have evidence on a motion for summary judgment. And the last one, the granddaddy of them all, defamation. What is defamation?
Defamation is when someone has done something to sully your good character. However, it's very hard to prove. There's a very high standard because there's remedies and you have to prove actual damages and things like that.
Yeah, especially here in the United States, it's hard to prove a defamation case. Now, over in Europe, you see them happen a lot more with the tabloids and things that happen there. I see lots of stories about celebrities suing tabloids in Europe and prevailing. But here in the United States, it's a higher standard.
And well, I think that in the in UK and stuff, they kind of look at intent. If your intent was you didn't care if this did anything to somebody, basically if it was kind of malicious, it was just to sell papers or magazines or whatever, I think they go ahead and you don't really have to prove what the damages are. They just say, you were malicious when you did this. You knew it wasn't true. You just wanted to sell papers. And so they go ahead and do it, kind of teach you a lesson.
Yeah. Here in the United States, the one thing that's actually hard to do with a public figure is you actually have to show actual malice, where there was some sort of malicious intent to actually do this.
Mm-hmm.
And it's hard to show malicious intent. I mean, it really is.
Unless you intercept an email or something like that.
Yeah, like this is really going to bring them down to their knees and cost them lots of money. So
yeah. Now, we know we don't have a case, but we're going to do this. We know this isn't true, but we're going to do it because we just want to see them twist in the wind.
Yeah, and I think that, you know, this could have been something where Billy Mitchell can show where it could possibly hurt him. If he can show that it hurts his restaurant or hurts his hot sauce because people aren't buying it now because they think he's some sort of a cheater scumbag who lies about video games. But, you know, who knows? I don't know if that's, I mean, I think that's probably part of the damage he alleges, but who knows if he actually can show that.
Well, here's the thing. I think that he was really good at one time, but then he grew up. Some of these other guys just never grew up.
Maybe they don't want to grow up. Maybe they're a Toys R Us kid.
I won't grow up.
That's a Peter Pan song, isn't it?
Yeah. That's right.
That's right. I forgot I'm talking to a former Captain Hook here.
That's right. I saw those rotten kids singing that.
So what do you think about the high scores? What's your opinion after doing some investigation on this?
You know, Salem was one of those rotten kids at one point.
I know. I know he was.
I forget which one he was, but he was in there. He was one of the Lost Boys.
Was he one of the Lost Boys, or was he one of the ones that followed you around?
No, he was a Lost Boy.
That's right. He was the Lost Boy. Who was Shmi?
That year that Salem was in it, Shmi was Caleb Donahoe.
Okay. But somebody was... Was one of Travis or Griffin?
Travis was the first time we did it.
Oh, okay, that's right. Travis.
But see, that first time was like 99 or
was that at
2000?
Was that at City Hall?
Oh, it was 98. No, it was actually at the new Huntington High. It was 98 when we did that, so that was before Salem.
Yeah.
Travis was Shmi in that one.
This is our podcast about Peter Pan performance appreciation here in Huntington.
And video games.
Video games. Maybe we need to grow up. I don't know.
We've fallen off the beaten path here.
So what do you think about the whole high score thing? I mean, do you think Billy Mitchell's score is legit, or do you think he kind of walked a fine line there and played on a MAME cabinet?
I think that if you're going to do this, it ought to be the original hardware and software, and they got to have certified witnesses that are there to see it. I don't think any of this in the basement on a rigged machine will suffice. And I videotaped it, and the videotape glitches in and out.
Now, what happens if I'm sitting on my cabinet here, videotaping me playing Donkey Kong on my main machine, and I get the high score?
Well, then you can brag about it to your friends, but Guinness isn't going to come knocking.
Well, they can come knocking on my door anytime they want, as long as they're bringing a keg of Guinness beer. That's the way I feel about it.
I know what you mean. They can come, yeah, but I don't think they will. But I wish they would come and deliver me beer regularly.
Yeah, I think would you rather have the high score for Donkey Kong in the Guinness Book of World Records or a keg of Guinness beer?
I would want a perpetual keg of Guinness beer.
That's a good answer. One I can appreciate, Tommy. Thanks to everybody for listening, and thanks to MCRB for use of their song, Dr. Lawyer Indian Chief.
We're proud to be coming to you almost live from Smurl Studios, high atop Three Last Mountain.
And we want to thank Audio Boom for being a part of their network.
And we also want to thank the McElroy Stable of Podcasts for helping give us our start. Their podcasts include Bim Bam, Sawbones, Still Buffering, and many other fine offerings.
If you have the chance, take the time to rate and review us on iTunes, especially if you like us. And if you didn't, don't bother.
You're not supposed to say that.
You're going to edit that out though, aren't you?
Why? You never did.
Thanks for listening. This has been
Court Appointed. I'm your co-host, Mike Meadows. I'm a lawyer and a dude.
And I'm your other co-host, Tommy Smurl. And I am just a dude. Hello, welcome to Tommy's Random Thought. Today's random thought is what's important in life. I know that if you were like most of us, the whole election fiasco, regardless of if you are red or blue, has been a nightmare. So much not knowing and people proclaiming things, experts that don't know what to say. The map guy for MSNBC working about 36 hours straight only to still not have any definitive answers. Poor guy. But here's the thing. If you voted, you already did your part. There's no sense to worry or what if. It's going to be whatever it's going to be. Don't waste your time fretting over something that you have no control over. We have to accept whatever the outcome is. Despite the threats, we're not going to move to another country. We will stay here and try to have a better plan for the next time. The problem with worrying over things you can't control is that you miss out on other things that you can. Your complaints or logic, no matter how sound, won't change the outcome. So just chill. What is obvious is that this country is at a 50-50 split. So no matter who wins, we have a long way to go as citizens of these United States. No one will be swayed because all of us are right and all of you are stupid. That is the feeling of both sides. So I don't know how we get anything done. But I do know this. If we sit around worrying or fighting about it, we will miss out on the important stuff. With my middle child, Taylor, home for the week of the election, the whole family gathered at my house and, of course, ordered food and made cocktails or drank beer all day Wednesday while we followed what was happening and hoped for clarity. Of course, it never came. But while everyone was worrying or complaining, I took my two granddaughters, 6-year-old Charlie and 2-year-old Cooper, out to play in the bouncy house we recently bought for us to have for them. I found a playlist of Disney tunes and brought out the little Bluetooth speaker that we had a dance party in the bouncy house for about 2 hours. Singing, dancing, and bouncing, just the three of us. It was great. The best part was, the election never even entered my mind for those 2 hours. Just their laughing and their singing. That's the important stuff you don't want to miss out on due to all this crap happening around us. We will survive no matter what, so don't let it steal your joy. This has been an important election, and I'm not minimizing it, but we all probably have those around us that are much more important. Hold those people tight and be glad they are there, and forget about all the pundits for a while. As we wrapped up 2 hours of Disney music, I told Charlie, I'm playing a song for me this time. I found my choice and cranked up the speaker. Charlie looked shocked and said, "What song is that, Pop?" I told her, "It's Sabotage by the Beastie Boys." She listened for a minute and said, "That song's crazy, Pop, but I like it." I told her, "Well, Charlie, you don't have to be crazy, but it sure helps." This has been Tommy's Random Thought.